The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for January is the museum's education program. School is back in session, and so is the museum's free admission program for local schools. Public and private school students, grades 1 through 12, in the Washington, D.C. area, will receive free admission to the museum when they visit as a school group. For details, including a list of local cities and counties eligible for this program, visit federalnewsradio.com.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Lori Nelson is the Director of Financial Reporting in the Office of Audit for the Postal Service Inspector General.
OPM sets the funding requirements for the CSRS and the FERS pension plans, and the Postal Act of 2006 mandates the pre-funding for the retirees' health care. So it's really OPM that needs to change, and they've gone on record as saying they won't change unless Congress tells them to.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk here, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today I'm here with Angel Santa, the Deputy Chief Information Officer, Office of Justice Programs at the Department of Justice. Good morning, Angel. How are you?
I'm fine, John. Thank you.
Are your toes frozen off yet? Or
just a dash.
It's nice
and warm here,
yeah.
Though.
I always troll around the internet for good topics for my listeners. And, Angel, most of my listeners are federal IT professionals, and they're challenged with all kinds of different aspects. You know, you can, even with their position, they have to be transparent and secure at the same time, and their budgets are getting pushed back. And, oh, by the way, you open up the Washington Post, they're getting pushed into the cloud.
Right.
And so what I try to do is find someone who been there, done that, got the T-shirt, maybe taken a few arrows, made a bunch of mistakes and succeeded. And what I'm trying to get out of you today is just some guidelines for my listeners to make that transition to the cloud. But before we dive into the cloud or up into the cloud, tell us a little about your background, how you wound up at DOJ.
Okay. Well, I can understand the holes in the shirt. I mean, it's you know, I've been in the IT field for a long time. It feels like, you know, a lot older when I go back and think of when I started. I actually, in around 1974, I started in the IT field as a state librarian. Went to school, got a computer science degree, a bachelor's, worked in private industry for several years, and then came up the chain as an application developer. So I joined the government in 88. I've been responsible for mission critical development systems and infrastructure systems. So I've gone up the chain and direct leadership of these mission critical systems. So I feel all the scars of out there.
You got the scars and arrows.
Yes,
it's tough for you to sit there with that arrow in the back.
And,
huh?
and those holy shirts are trophies.
Yeah, I know that. It's great. Well, let me try to paint the picture here. So we have the Recovery Act, and they're going to pour a lot of money in grants to all kinds of different organizations out there. And so people like Angel are responsible for, you know, maybe working with information technology to manage some of these grants. And so what we have here is we have a big hockey stick in information you have to provide for your users. We know that. At the same time, your organization was sitting on some old equipment. You know, mm-hmm. You had the functional equivalent of maybe a 1988. You go in your driveway, and you're asked to all of a sudden go to the Indy 500.
Yeah.
And that's really what happened, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's a good analogy. We basically, when the Recovery Act hit, we knew basically that was a storm from a technological support as far as infrastructure. We had an aging technology, and we went from, we have roughly 75,000 users throughout the nation, from state, local, tribal, and other communities that we support. So we went from, let's say, 11,000 applications with the Recovery Act. It went up to 27,000 applications. We went from, let's say, 5,000 awards, doubling it to over 10,000 awards. So we knew that we could not support the transactions that would hit us. So we had to look at a solution. And our solution, we had to cobble something up quickly to meet the immediate demand. But then we also began to look long term. How can we continue to support the growth of our business at OJP? And how can we sustain that? Something that would be reliable and would be responsive to the client.
No, I guess the opportunity, if you have that Yugo sit in your driveway, the opportunity is to move up to a new car, and that's the challenge. I mean, what new car do you choose? How do you choose it? I mean, there's a whole world of making decisions here. And you didn't have the luxury of time, did you?
We did not. We actually did not have a lot of time. And actually, I remember when Yugos came out, they were about 4,500. I think I can get a – I should be able to get a – I don't know if I can get a server at that point. But yeah, it was some tough decisions. We went out, and we had a lot of discussions. We went through a full planning stage to determine, okay, where is it we want to go long term as far as the business and how we can support it? What's out there? How do these technologies fit together? And we didn't want to do any throwaway. We wanted to make sure whatever we put in place lasted and was stable.
I think last week we had Chris Kemp on from NASA. Now, the typical listener thinks of NASA, they go, okay, the rockets come out of Florida, there's a Johnson Space Center in Texas, and they probably have an office here. NASA's got three or four different places. It only makes sense. Department of Justice, you have a large facility here. You have a data center in Rockville and Dallas, and those had to be incorporated in your plans as well, didn't they?
That is correct. And when we did our planning, we looked, okay, how do we go about doing this? I mean, is it a public? Is it a private cloud? How do we secure it if we go out to the public? And as we look at the federal data center consolidation initiatives, we knew that was coming when we were talking about a state. So, and we know Justice has data centers in Rockville and Dallas, and we also needed to utilize our data center here in the D.C. area. So how do we best fit the business need and make sure there's no latency across?
And so you looked at your staffing requirements, and you must have looked at your staff and said, yeah, we're good to go here. We can probably do a lot of this in-house rather than using an outside vendor like many organizations might. Is that right?
Sure, that's correct. And definitely we needed some expertise outside to kind of complement what we have. But that is very important that you have the people. If you decide to do it in-house, do you have the people? Do you have the skill sets? How do you prioritize them? How do you keep them engaged and communicate? And how do you help them also grow? If they don't have the skills, then how do you have the training in place? How do you communicate and have the vendors at the table with you?
Let me try to paint the picture here. So the project cost $9 million. It took about 16 months. And, 16 months, I mean, if you're doing something like building a road, you can see the beginning and the end. But over a 16-month period, starting a project like this, new technology pops up.
Yeah.
I mean, so we sit back here and we say, okay, I'm going to use X, Y, and Z. 12 months into the program, everything changes. There's new virtualization software. Oh, company X has a new product. Mm-hmm. And it's half the price and it's twice the work. And I think that for someone in your shoes, I mean, anyone can get a piece of paper and write a plan and push people to do it. But you better have an eraser there, buddy. I mean, or something's going to change in the middle of the plan. Isn't that tough?
And that is tough. And that actually does happen. And you know, you always prepare for the unexpected. It's going to happen. We spent, when we say 16 months, about 8 months of it, we're just sitting down talking and planning. From the time we got the equipment to the time we turned, and I call it the beast on, when we turned the system on, it was about 8 months. But we ran into technologies in the middle. For instance, there was one specific technology that came up. It was implemented or made available in December, and we were right in the middle of the project, and we chose to we sat down, we talked through it, and we said, you know what, this is a value to where we're trying to go. It would actually help the business. It will help the technology. It'll provide a better mix and going long term. So we actually implemented a piece that just came out in December, but we sat down and we talked through it and said, can it really work? And when you start throwing in additional technologies, then you have a mixing bowl. How do they work together? And any little change you make and even any tactical decisions will impact you long term. So you really have to think through it. And sometimes you have to rework.
And you're not sitting in a back room somewhere. This is money and this is grants. And if I'm sitting in South Dakota and I'm doing a grant, I want to know exactly how much and when and where and what's going on, and your system will reflect that. And so you have to be transparent with at the same time as a constantly changing technology.
And that's correct. We do roughly $3 billion in grants annually over the last 10 years. I believe we're in a $50 billion range. I'm sorry, $26 billion range. And we have to be able to continue to support that business.
Great. Talk more about moving into the cloud and some issues that Angel has overcome. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Angel Santa, the Deputy Chief Information Officer, Office of Justice Programs at the Department of Justice. The first segment kind of reviewed the big picture of what Angel just tackled here in the last few years. His agency was a lot of stuff was dumped on him, unexpected, and they had to upgrade a couple key programs, and they moved to the cloud and had a lot of success in that. And that's why we're interviewing him, trying to get some best practices, maybe some guidelines for listeners who may be tossed into that. Maybe 6-8 months from now, you'll be sitting in your agency, and someone will toss something on you unexpected. You have to move to the cloud. What to do, how to do it. Let's take a look at just this transition. So you're stuck with this big project that had to come up, spent 8 months planning for it. You had to look at different objectives and moving up operating system, moving up hardware. Just doing that alone probably made the system more efficient, didn't it, Angel?
It did. I mean, as far as response time, and again, you always go back to look at the impact on the user and the ability to provide faster response, the reliability of the system, how do you sustain it long-term, how do you grow, how do you reuse what you've put in place. And I think that's one of the big benefits is once you put a solid foundation in place, is how do you then capitalize on that going forward in the future? And for us, is, you know, you build applications in the future to recognize that infrastructure you put in place. So after we implemented, we were able to quickly bring up other applications. We brought up a payment system right after, or payment request system right after we implemented the initial infrastructure. And now we're now also planning for the future and the cost savings of putting additional applications in place. So we have other systems in the OJP business that'll capitalize on this, let alone the energy savings, let alone the ability to maintain a more stable and a more homogeneous environment.
So we take a look at a project like this, and continuity of operations, that's a hot button for me. I think that's important. And traditionally, six years ago, you may have a server in one location and then a redundant server in a different location. But switching to the cloud, you take that paradigm and throw it out, and all of a sudden the cloud means you can spin up a server somewhere and have a redundant server there instead of a physical different server. It gives a lot of flexibility, doesn't it?
It does. And if you look at the definition of cloud, and you've heard so many before, and I guess for us it's basically the paradigm. If you look at it at its core, it's being able to provide business agility, and by extracting a computing infrastructure and providing the capability, the flexibility to just deploy it. And what we did in essence is we were able to real time replicate data 1,800 miles across the lines from Rockville over to Dallas. And I believe it's around 1,800, it may be less. But real-time replication across the lines. We had to put up a COOP, continuity of operations, and this is it enhances that ability. Right now, we are populating data, you know, all across the lines, and it's available real-time. So should something happen at some point, God forbid here, we can easily come up in Dallas. And if we look long-term, my long-term vision, it's more of an active environment where continuity of operations, it's not an issue. An environment in Rockville is active at any time. An environment in Dallas is active at any time. An environment here, local DC, is active. So you're pushing and utilizing the servers across. So long-term, that is our vision. And first you start with the infrastructure. And then as you build the applications, so they're aware of the distributed environment. So you can utilize the resources across the network.
Let's talk about your resources in your organization there. Is there a reason why you chose not to use an outside vendor, or do it all yourself? Is it just you looked at your staff and you said, hey, we got the talent to do this, or was it a budgetary constraint? Or give us some guidelines on how that thought process took place.
And you're not talking about public versus private, just
no.
Basically support structure.
Yep.
Yeah, we did look at the factors. Always money is a obvious consideration, but we definitely look, can we in-house do this work? Do we have the skill set, and do we have the resources, and again, you've got the human capital, that we have folks that are engaged, that there is a strong confidence that they can get the job done. And that had, the biggest effect on us choosing to do it in-house.
Well, let's talk about the public versus the private cloud. During that 8-month planning period, you must have been scratching your head and thinking about different options and saying, well, do we want to, you know, just dump something over in the Amazon cloud? Do we want to take a look at another cloud? Or do you want to have our own cloud? And now the terms are becoming more and more typical, a private cloud versus a public cloud.
Sure.
And no one ever thought about that. And so that was your decision. You had to sit back with some of your staff and you know, throw chairs at each other and yell and scream and say, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea. It's cheaper to put it on Amazon, isn't it? Well, it may be cheaper, it may secure, be more secure in Dallas. And what was the thought process there? How did those fights take place? Did you throw any chairs?
There are some chairs that are in repair now. But sure, there were a lot of discussions, and our CIO, Walter Ewenau, was, you know, part of those discussions. We looked at public versus private, and you know, more recent, there's been an initiative that, you know, you start looking at cloud first, whether public or private. But we did look at that, and you always have to look at your business and the security of your business and what makes sense for your business and what makes sense long term. So I know that we're still wrestling with making sure we have a secure environment out in a public cloud and having access to that secure information. How do you support it? Do the vendors have the right security clearances to support that? And as that continues to evolve, I'm sure there'll be more and more offerings and systems moving out to the public. But for us, and you have to again look at your risk tolerance. If it's risky going out there, but sure, I mean, you can put measures in place to kind of lower the risk exposure. But I think for us, it made sense to really stay in a public domain, and at some point, be prepared to do a hybrid cloud.
You know, that's what's fascinating. We had Curtis Turner here a couple weeks back, and he talked about the benefits.gov, and he was considering Amazon, considering his own shop, and guess what? He farmed it out to the Department of Agriculture in Kansas. Mm-hmm. So we may have another person who looks at it and says, no, we're going to take and put it in Amazon, or you may look at it and go, for our particular situation, given the talent we have, given the risk environment, we are going to keep it in-house, but keep it at a remote location. Complete different solution, different problem completely, isn't it?
Right, it is. And at recent conferences, you've seen some of the heads of these private industries, for instance, Microsoft, Ballmer, you have Oracle, Ellison, and then you have these other Cisco chambers have all recognized that there's going to be an evolution of a lot of more public clouds, and how do they go about supporting that? So, again, it's always, there's a big risk factor that we have to deal with. And I know that that'll continue to evolve and it'll be more secure as we move forward.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Angel Santa, the Deputy Chief Information Officer, Office of Justice Programs at the Department of Justice. Big win for Angel. He can have a little star on his forehead here. He made a big transition over a period of 16 months and was successful. And we spent a lot of time talking about some technical issues, and I want to talk more about this planning process, 8 months of planning. When you were evaluating technology, you're evaluating servers, evaluating cloud services, you were evaluating human beings as well. And so that's what, how would you look at your staff and say, well, yeah, I think she can handle it, or maybe he can't? It's kind of a difficult proposition here, isn't it?
Sure, sure. And you have to, and I, by the way, that star in my head, I mean, it's still there.
It's still there. We can see it. He's proud of it.
And again, collectively, and as a group, we were able to come together and deliver. And so I have to definitely give credit to all the folks involved. But yeah, you look at the people, and do they have the fire? Do they have the I have to say the ability. Can they grow? Can they learn? Can they pull it out? But you also have to have someone that leading the effort that's going to bring people together, that's going to maximize all his skills, that has been in these battles, that can actually make the decisions and move people forward to get them to go cohesively.
You know, I look at a resume and I've reviewed many of them, and sometimes you get deceived by, you know, certifications and degrees. But how can you measure creativity, diligence, and refusing to have a project end? I mean, creativity and diligence is probably more important than a degree, I think. I mean, how can it be flexible in different situations that unexpectedly can pop up?
Right, right. The you're going to need that ability, and you can see it. And I agree. The practical side, can people make sense of a situation and pull it out? And I've always felt give people the opportunity. If they want to do it, if they have the heart and the desire to do it, give them the opportunity. And always looking at the business in the long sense. Does it make sense for the business short term and long term? As you continue to grow your people, you continue to add value to your organization. For instance, here at OJP, as we continue to evolve our people, our skill sets, we'll be able to better support our business.
And we've had enterprise architects on the air, and we talk about enterprise architecture and long term, and they always talk about, you know, the value of planning, and they talk, geez, you know, really, you know, you want to maybe, you know, make sure you have the forms before you pour the concrete. Maybe you have the forms and measure it twice and make sure and measure three times maybe. And I think that was interesting. I never thought the project would be half planning, half success, but that's not a bad formula. So the listeners can take away and say, well, maybe it's not a waste of time to try to evaluate not only technology, evaluate the staff as well, and that may not always come up in all the discussions ahead of time.
Right, right. And you know, I've always been let's get down to the work, let's do the work. But I think I felt in this case, and then Walter and I both, in this case, let's talk about it. Let's make sure that we can do it. Let's make sure we can line everything up. Let's make sure everyone at least wants to get involved in it and can deliver on this project.
When I referred to that Washington Post article earlier, talked about cloud and data centers, 2,100 federal data centers. And it'd be nice to be in a leadership position to say, okay, reduce that by half. Well, no, wait a minute. I mean, you can't just arbitrarily do that, go through a building and unplug every other server. You do have to have this planning component as a key part of it, don't you?
You do. And, you know, I support all the initiatives. We talk about the green computing. We talk about consolidation of data centers. We talk about looking at the cloud first. And overall perspective, I support them. It's just how do we proceed from a practical perspective and still be able to run your business? How do we implement solutions? And if we decide to go to private and making sure you secure it, if you look at a private industry, if they put their business out on the line, they can go from boom to bust in a second if they get exposed. So it's how do you move practically in supporting all those initiatives?
So what you've done is you're taking an in-house approach to solving a transition to the cloud. And I think our listeners should know, work well for you. It may not work for them, but they have to consider it. I think, you know, look to the cloud first, yes. Consider in-house first as well. It seems like it'd be the most economical, but it may not always be depending on, for example, deadlines.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, each situation is different. You have to really look at your situation. But I definitely agree. Look at the cloud first, whether public or private, how to utilize it. And understanding if you're building yourself first, it may be an initial cost up front for putting that whole infrastructure in place. And I feel you have to virtualize. It's a given when you go into a cloud and you're building it. But you have to, each situation is going to change and decisions will be varied on your situation.
Interesting situation. We have to end the interview here. We're running out of time. What I'd like to do is come back in 6-9 months and find out what happened at DOJ, if they learned the lesson from you and took other programs and made that transition. And did they choose the same things you chose? Did they choose to go in-house? Did they choose to retain the services in the cloud? Or maybe a different part of your organization had a different set of solutions for similar type problems. You know, grants management, obviously, there's money involved. You better be accurate. You better be redundant. And I think that'd be a great story to tell in a few months and find out if you have another star on your forehead or we don't know.
I should go back into the military. I'm a 2-star general then at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I appreciate the invitation, John. I'd be glad to come back and then see how our success story goes.
Yeah.
We definitely have a good vision of where we're going.
Great, great, great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Angel Santa, the Chief Information Officer, Office of Justice Programs at the Department of Justice. Thanks, Angel.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Manish Chopra is the Obama administration's chief technology officer.
The ecosystem that's been born out of the open health data movement, I believe, is one of the shining lights.
Of course, it's great having somebody like Todd Park over there.
We've got chief technologies officers at the VA under Peter Levin and Jim Shelton, who runs innovation over at the Department of Education. All have demonstrated results in fostering these ecosystems to not only publish the data, but to do something meaningful with it.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/